This is the B-side of the lecture for December 1996. The title is The Prophecy of Joel for the Modern World. We find that the Apostle Peter, in the very first sermon he gave to the Jewish population in Jerusalem, after the death and resurrection of Christ, as a matter of fact, it was 50 days later, on the day of Pentecost, when they were assembled in the temple, when signs and miracles were there being given, and that's what the Jews wanted to see, then the Apostle Peter got up and he selected a prophecy from the whole of the Old Testament, the most important. And to him at the time, it was the prophecy of Joel. The prophecy section that he picked was, as we have it in our King James Version, Joel chapter 2, verses 28 through 32. I read that chapter to you, or that portion of the chapter, in Acts chapter 2, because that's the one that the Apostle Peter quoted. The Jews at the time were very familiar with that prophecy. And after all, since they were interested in signs and wonders and miracles, there is no prophecy in the Old Testament that spoke of more miracles and signs to occur than this one in Joel. Oh, yes, there are others that speak about them, but in a concentrated way. Because the miracles that are going to be associated here with the end time, when the day of the Lord is going to be introduced into the world, are miracles which only God himself could design and could conspire to bring into operation. He speaks here in verse 31 of Joel chapter 2 of the sun being turned into darkness. Only God could do that. The moon into blood, and other wonders in the heavens, the earth, blood, fire, pillars of smoke, things of that nature. All of this is going to occur just before the great and terrible day of the Lord come. So we're going to have to see these things. That's what the Apostle Peter was saying. He actually thought that they would occur in his day. Some of them did occur. The prophesying and the daughters prophesying and the sons and things like that did take place. But there's coming a time in the near future, before the advent of the day of the Lord that is actually being shown here, that is, once chronology was understood by the apostles and Christ gave it to them, this refers to the time just in the advance of us here, when we are to expect, and Israel should expect, great signs and wonders and miracles and things of that nature within a context of destruction. Now, this Joel prophecy here that Peter selected is in the midst of the prophecy of Joel. And in our King James Version, it's only three chapters long to begin with. And in this beginning section here, I mean, that Peter quoted, it's really in the middle part of Joel. Something went on before in Joel's prophecy that Peter didn't even mention anything about. He didn't mention it because the things that are shown in this prophecy in chapter 1 and 2 never happened in the time of the Apostle Peter. It never happened in the generations before the time of the Apostle Peter. As far as we know, it has never happened in history. But they are going to happen just on we're on the threshold of these things happening. Now, I'm not talking about next year, and I'm not talking about 10 years from now. But I am talking about a period of time not very far in the future, when we're going to see the events come together on the stage of prophecy, which will indicate clearly that the prophecies of Joel and all the other prophecies of the Old and New Testaments will find their fulfillment to the crossing of a T and the dotting of an I. Now, they are going to occur. So Peter here, he actually selected a prophecy of Joel in the midst of his own prophecy. And in verse 28 of Joel chapter 2, it actually says, and it shall come to pass afterward. After what? After the things that are mentioned in the preceding section of Joel. Now, that word afterward is also in the New Testament. It's in Peter's sermon over there in chapter 2 of the book of Acts. That word afterward is there. Peter was admitting that certain events are going to take place, some things, even before this occurs, which will introduce this period of time when I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh, when your sons and daughters shall prophesy, when your old men shall dream dreams and young men shall see visions, and when the sun will be turned into darkness and the moon into blood, when he will show wonders in the heavens and the earth, blood, fire, and pillars of smoke. All of these things are after something else. After what? Well, now that's where you have to turn back the pages a little bit in Joel, and you're going to be surprised what you find. This book of Joel here, written about 800 B.C., let's say in the last part of the 9th century, the beginning of the 8th century, B.C., somewhere in there, we find the word of Yahweh, the word of the Lord coming to Joel. And he puts down this prophecy. And the interesting part of it is that when you analyze these three chapters, you will find that almost his main emphasis is almost exclusively to the country of Judah, not to the northern tribes of Israel, not to Galilee and areas like that, but primarily to the area central around Jerusalem in that region. You will find quite a number of the verses here referring to that area. Also to the Holy Temple that will be in existence at Jerusalem. This prophecy here, 1, 2, 3 chapters, all anticipate, all are assured that there will be a temple at Jerusalem. That's another thing that has not occurred in our generation, but it is prophesied to happen. There will be a new temple in Jerusalem. And if you want to know where this new temple is going to be restored, you'll have to get my book on what they call the Third Temple. You know, that is prophesied to occur. The two witnesses of the book of Revelation are going to be associated with that temple. There's going to be a new temple in Jerusalem. And if you want to know exactly where it is, you write in, we'll tell you, because it's in the Holy Scriptures. In this chapter 1 and chapter 2 and chapter 3 of Joel, it is understood that there will be a temple at Jerusalem. And it's not there yet. So the prophecy can't happen tomorrow, you see, not until there are temples. But there are several verses here about the temple being there and about the ministers of God, who are the priests who will be officiating in the temple. Now, this first chapter here gives a prophecy of destruction. And it goes over into the second chapter as well. It's a prophecy of destruction upon Israel, particularly in the area of Jerusalem. And it's quite an extensive destruction. Interestingly, according to Joel, it will not be a destruction coming from the hand of man. That is, it will not be the Assyrians who do it. It will not be the Babylonians who do it. It will not be the Persians who will do it. It will not be the Greeks who will do it. It won't even be the Romans who will do it. Now, the Romans were in charge when the Apostle Peter said, gave information about this prophecy. Now, the Romans have come and gone, and the Roman Empire is no longer with us. But now we have around Jerusalem today several kingdoms and political powers. And we have in Europe some very powerful ones. And we have here in the United States at the present time, when I am making this lecture in December 1996, we are reckoned to be the most powerful force, political and military force, on earth today. Oh, yes, we have powerful nations around Israel. There's no question about that. But do you know that this first prophecy here, it's a most unique prophecy because it does not even involve humans at all. And yet a destruction is going to take place. Now, this destruction is going to come after a restitution of all times, after a restoration. You and I are going to witness that restoration. Now, this prophecy is for a few years in advance of us. Now, I'm not putting it way out there 50 years. I'm not even putting it 30 years. I am saying it will not happen in the next 10. I'm almost certain it can't happen in the next 10. But within the next 20, we may be getting closer to it and be able to see that this prophecy here of destruction, which is going to happen upon the nation of Israel, and it's going to take about 1 year of their time to experience. And it is quite an utter destruction. Now, immediately on the heels of this destruction, they're going to be restored. As it says, and thankfully that's what Joel says. But the destruction that is coming is not a destruction that mankind will engender. And when it happens, however, the people of Israel will know that God is in charge, because he is saying right here what this destruction will be. He says the land will be like the Garden of Eden beforehand, and it will be like utter destruction afterward. Once this northern power, he talks about, comes through the land, and does what it is prophesied to do. Now, what is the prophecy of Joel in chapter 1 and 2 that leads up to that prophecy Peter gave, you see, about the sons and daughters having visions and dreams, about the astronomical prophecies that are going to take place leading up to the day of the Lord? What is going to happen, occupying about a year of time, if you look at it carefully? It's going to occur in Palestine. It's going to occur principally in the southern part of Palestine, most certainly around the area of Jerusalem. And this prophecy is here in chapter 1 and in chapter 2 of Joel, preceding the astronomical signs. what is this prophecy? Let's look at it very carefully. You need to get out the book of Joel and read it yourself. I don't have time to go through every little detail of it, but let's go through a little bit so that you can begin to get the thrust of what Joel is talking about here. Verse 2 of chapter 1. Hear this, you old men, and give ear, all you inhabitants of the land. In this case, he means the land of Judah. He doesn't mean the rest of the world. He means the land of Judah. Has this been in your days, or even in the days of your fathers? And tell you your children of it. Let your children tell their children, and their children another generation. In other words, it's going to happen at one time, and it's never happened before, but when it happens, let them tell it down through the ages. All right, here's the prophecy of what's going to occur. That which the palmer worm hath left, the locust has eaten. That which the locust has left, the canker worm will eat. That which the canker worm will left, the caterpillar will eat. These are insects. Now, some people have said these insects may denote Gentile nations. You look at it very carefully and you'll find that it actually means literal insects. That's the only way you can really interpret it when you read the whole first two chapters. Awake, you drunkards, and weep. Howl, you drinkers of wine. That means those who indulge overly, because of the new wine, for it is cut off from your mouth. For a nation, now this here is the nation that's involved, is come upon my land, and I'll tell you what this nation is. It's a nation of insects, of locusts, strong, without number, whose teeth are the teeth of a lion, and hath the cheek teeth of a great lion. He hath laid my vine, that is my vine in Israel, waste, and barked my fig tree. He hath made it clean bare and cast it away. The branches thereof are made white. Lament like a virgin girded with sackcloth for the husband of her youth. The meat offering and the drink offering is cut off from the house of the Lord. In other words, the temple is not even going to have enough food at the time to be able to sustain the ceremonial rituals that it is supposed to have. The field is wasted. The land mourns. For the corn, that means the grain, is wasted. The new wine is dried up. The oil languishes. Be you ashamed, O you husbandmen, you farmers. Howl, O you vine dressers, for the wheat and the barley, because the harvest of the field is perished. It's going to be a single year that's going to occur in advance of us that's going to sweep the land of Israel from their agricultural produce. And it's going to be almost complete in and around the city of Jerusalem. Now, that does not mean they're not going to survive. They will survive because the rest of the world is not going to be involved in this. But they are going to find that out of the north will come forth hordes of insects, not the south, not the east where they normally come forth, but coming from the north, which is most remarkable. It says the vine is dried up, the fig tree languishes, the pomegranate tree, the palm tree also, the apple tree, all the trees of the field are withered, because joy is withered away from the sons of men who will be living in that area at that time during this one year that's going to occur in advance of us. Gird yourselves and lament, you priests, that is, those in the temple. Howl, you ministers of the altar. Come, lie all night in sackcloth, you ministers of my God. For the meat offering, the drink offering, is withholden from the house of your God. Sanctify ye a fast, call a solemn assembly, gather the elders and all the inhabitants of the land into the house of the Lord your God, and cry unto the Lord, alas for the day. Now notice this, it's going to lead right into something. For the day of the Lord is at hand. It's not quite here yet. It's just at hand. This will be a sign and a wonder to Israel to get prepared for the day of the Lord, because the day of the Lord is just on the threshold when this happens. And as a destruction from the Almighty shall it come. That's the day of the Lord. And you know, if you'll go back to the book of Revelation and you check with chapter 6, where the six seals there are given, and then all of a sudden the seventh seal is introduced in chapter 7, do you know what that seventh seal is, which lasts all the way to the 16th chapter, inclusively of the book of Revelation? And it talks about destruction upon destruction upon destruction. It's the wrath of the Father and of Christ on this world. It is a destruction coming from them. And by the way, I want to tell you something. If you are a part of the family of God, if you are putting your trust in God the Father and of Christ, why should he have any wrath on you? He doesn't have to have wrath on you if you are practicing the principles of the biblical revelation. These are on people who are not practicing those things. Now, we could suffer from them to a certain extent, but the point of view is this from the scripture. God sends his wrath upon people who he claims needs the wrath. Now, in this particular environment right here, he is going to send this judgment upon Israel for 1 year, only 1 year. And it's going to be succeeded by the advents, which will lead to the coming day of the Lord in the midst of this. And on the tail end of it, however, God is going to send his spirit upon all flesh. And in the land, the daughters and the sons will give visions and dreams and interpretations. That shows that God is not out of the picture at all. And then after that is when the sun will be turned darkened and the moon and so forth. You find that in the book of Revelation. You see, this chapter here, 1, and I haven't got to chapter 2 of Joel and chapter 3, they are dealing with this time period right on the horizon to us, which introduces the day of the Lord into world affairs. At this time, it says in verse 17, the seed is rotten under their clods. The garners are laid desolate. The barns are broken down. The corn is withered. It goes on to say that in chapter 2, blow you the trumpet in Zion. Sound an alarm in my holy mountain. Let all the inhabitants of the land tremble, for the day of the Lord comes. It's just right on the heels. For it is nigh at hand, just very nigh at hand. So, the Jews at the time were requiring signs. The Gentiles, not so much. They wanted wisdom and things of that nature. You want a sign? God's going to give you a sign. And the sign is, for the day of the Lord, is a massive destruction in and around Jerusalem by insects. Now, I know that sounds like an almost impossible thing in our modern world. But I ask you this question. Have we been able to control all of the insects that come even out of Africa today? You know, we find of locust plagues coming up occasionally, don't we? And they are not able, I mean our modern scientists, in many cases, to put a rope of restraint around these facts of nature. And here we're finding a northern army that is being described. A most unusual thing because it's going to come out of the north. You talk about a witness that is going to occur to Israel and to the world. When this prophecy actually takes place, it's going to be the main signal to Israel that the day of the Lord is nigh, right on the threshold. And if it occurs to Israel, it's also going to occur to you and to me. Now, we haven't seen that happen yet. In fact, it says it's going to be so extraordinary that you've never heard of anything like it before. You see? And remember what Book of Daniel says? The Great Tribulation is something that occurs only once, and it will never occur again. And what did Jesus himself say on the Mount of Olives when he was giving his Olivet prophecy? He says there's a day coming of destruction, of tribulation. There's not going to be like it before, nor will it ever occur again. All of these events are put together in one type of prophetic environment, and here we're having more details given by the prophet Joel. What he is showing here is a definite witness that God is in charge of Israel and of Jerusalem. And when these events here take place, and it comes to pass that a whole northern army of insects comes and strips the nation bare for 1 year, you're going to see the people of Israel and the rest of the world beginning to say, I believe there is a God after all. And you know, that's a fact. This is where signs and wonders begin to come into the matter. Blow you the trumpet in Zion, chapter 2. The holy mountain is going to be disturbed. Verse 2, a day of darkness, of gloominess, a day of clouds and thick darkness. As the morning spread upon the mountains, a great people and a strong people. Nothing like it before, it says. Neither shall there be any more after it. This people happens to be insects, believe it or not. And it's going to occur before that prophecy that Peter was speaking about. Now, you know, when Peter got up to teach the people of Jerusalem on that Pentecost day, he knew from experience, from historical experience, that this event had not taken place yet. That's why he even picked out Joel's prophecy. And really, when you get it in the Greek, it means, he didn't mean it was actually being fulfilled then. He means, this is like it will be in that day. He was picking that prophecy out and saying, what you're seeing around us in the temple, where prophesying is going on, is like that. that Joel is talking about. But if that's like it's going to be, we're going to be seeing some mighty miracles taking place in the next few years in advance of us. And this first and second chapter of Joel speaks about modern times. Because that event, have you ever heard in history where a nation of insects, a people of insects, of all types of insects, have come against Israel, particularly around Jerusalem, and stripped the whole country bare? Have you ever heard of it in history? There is not a word of it. The point is, it hasn't happened yet. It will happen, and once it happens, the whole year is going to be devastation in that area of the world, not the rest of the world, that area of the world. And what will happen will be so severe that God will never bring it back again. It's going to be that severe. That's what he says here. A fire devours before them, and behind them a flame burns. The land is as the Garden of Eden before them, and behind them a desolate wilderness. This is what Joel is saying. Now, this is not a prophecy of Ernest Martin. All I'm doing is reading the scripture. I can tell you as a historian, however, that it's never happened in history. I can tell you also that these events mentioned here of signs and wonders that Joel is talking about, they haven't occurred in history either. Only limited amounts of things of that nature. It is no wonder that the Apostle Peter picked out this particular prophecy here to warn the Jews of what was going to occur. Now, he did think that in that very generation in which he lived back there, they would see these things happen. But in that 40-year period, from 30 A.D. to 70 A.D., when the temple was destroyed, these events of Joel did not occur. Now, does that mean that Joel's prophecy will not take place? The Apostle Peter said, you know, in 2 Peter chapter 2, the day of the Lord is as 1,000 years. And, you know, only 4,000 years had passed up to that time. 2,000 have passed since the time of Christ. And what are we coming into here just in a few years in advance of us? We are going to celebrate the 2,000th anniversary of the introduction of Jesus of Nazareth, who came from Bethlehem, born in Bethlehem. When he came into the world, we're going to be celebrating that anniversary. People are beginning to look at the year 2000. A window of opportunity is opening up for you and for me and for all of us who love the Bible to be able to present not only the prophecies of the Bible, but also the grandeur and the wonders and things like that associated with the nativity of Jesus that God gave to the whole world at the time, that it was so inspiring, not destruction, but inspiring at the introduction of Christ, that even the Magi coming from the eastern countries were inspired to come and give gifts to the newborn child. I am convinced that in the next few years in advance of us, the same thing is going to be happening again, that peace and security and a time of refreshment and restoration is going to come. After the restoration comes, we're going to see this period of Joel come. We're going to come into it. Read Revelation chapter 6, 7 and 8, right in there. You'll find the seven seals mentioned there. Go back to Matthew 24, the Olivet prophecy of Jesus, and he gives a scenario there in chronological order, depending upon these prophecies here. Also, look at Luke chapter 21, where the same prophecies are given, but in a little different interpretation by Christ, in which he brings in the signs of the heavens and things like that. We haven't seen those things yet, but they're there on the horizon to us. Before that time occurs, we're going to be given the opportunity of restoring the Bible back to its pristine condition in the order of the Old Testament books, in the proper order of the New Testament books. And when I was down at New Orleans just recently at a conference of 8,000 theologians, where I had no time to go anywhere else but right there, I talked to quite a number of them, and some of the top scholars in this world I talked to regarding the manuscript version of the Bible, and they said, yes, Dr. Martin, it is time we get this back into order. Even they themselves are beginning to see that it's necessary that these things be done. There's coming a restoration. You and I, who are part of ASK, are on the threshold of giving back to the world the truth. We're also giving it to the Israelis and to the people of that nature. This prophecy of Joel here has not yet happened in history. We need to be able to tell people of that and to look forward to these things. You and I have a responsibility, not because we have been picked by God and given a commission. Paul had a commission. Joel had a commission. Moses had a commission. You don't need a commission. You know why? Because all you need to know is who you are. You are a child of the living God. You are a son or a daughter of God. You are a part of the family of God. If God has called you to understand that, you should take it upon yourself to see that this knowledge of the understanding of the truth, this refreshment that's going out, this restoration of the truth, be given to all people in the world. And you know what Jesus said in chapter 24 of Matthew, in the midst of this very prophecy here of Joel, which he put into a historical and prophetic context of the near future. He said, before these things happen, the gospel of the kingdom, and the gospel of the kingdom refers to Israel and the kingdom, but there's also the gospel that you and I know called the mystery, which is in advance how you and I can become and are members of the very family of God. The gospel is going to go to the whole world, and then shall the end come. What we need to do is to be reading Joel chapter 1, chapter 2, and chapter 3. I didn't even get into chapter 3 in this lecture. Read it very carefully, because on the heels of destruction is coming restoration, a beautiful and wonderful time in which Jesus Christ will be ruling on this earth, and it's going to be for 1,000 years. We are at the crisis time in history. Believe me, we are. We're at the time of restoration and refreshment. Let's be about our Father's business and teach these prophecies, teach the doctrines of the truth, teach the chronological and historical matters that reveal Jesus Christ as the Messiah. Let's get this information to the world. If you and I will take it upon our shoulders to do it, God will protect you, because he has no wrath to give to his children that are doing his will. This material substance here called plagues and things of that nature, which he's going to unleash against certain parts of the world and then finally the totality of the world, does not have to be a part of you at all, simply because we are doing the will of the Almighty God through Christ. Let us pay attention to these prophecies. And remember, Joel is a prophecy for modern times, not for ancient times. Let's keep our eyes on the gospel and upon this prophecy, and we will all be very enlightened if we do. This concludes the B-side of the lecture for December 1996, The Prophecy of Joel for the Modern World.